Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. One of the initiatives announced under Budget 2022 when it was tabled last Friday was a jobs guarantee initiative called Jamin Kerja. Now, with an allocation of 4.8 billion ringgit, the scheme aims to create 600,000 jobs and is expected to reduce the unemployment rate from 4.6% to 4%. While the initiative has been lauded by many, questions remain over the sustainability and quality of the jobs that will be created. So when it comes to job creation, what should governments do? That's what we'll explore tonight on the show. And our first guest is Cheryl Hamdan, who is the Information Chief for UMNO and also recently appointed as Economic Director in the Prime Minister's Office. Cheryl, let's talk about the Jamin Kerja Initiative. I mean, what do you understand to be the thinking behind the Job Guarantee Program? I'm just wondering, you know, the questions about who it's meant for and what kind of jobs that might likely be created.
Right. I think the thinking behind it is really combating unemployment as a key thrust in the recovery plan for COVID or post-COVID. We've been speaking a lot over the past year and a half about cash aid, and that's always going to be a critical part of our economic policy, fortunately or unfortunately. But the only way a sustainable path to recovery will be achieved is with two things, really: jobs creation and SMEs or companies having their economic activities not curtailed via COVID or lockdowns anymore. So I think this is one of two big elements that informs the philosophy or the thinking of economic policy at this point, at least from my understanding.
Cheryl, can you walk us through some of the details about this? Because some of it is linked to hiring within the government sector, within GLCs, and some of it seems to be in supporting private businesses to retain their staff or to hire people by, you know, giving some portion of the wages, subsidizing some portion of the wages. Could you help us understand how complex this whole endeavor is?
It will be complex in its implementation, but I think off the bat, I want to say that Jamin Kerja, although it's called Jamin Kerja, from my understanding at least, it's not a job guarantee in a pure theoretical sense, but it's a step in that direction. In the pure theoretical sense, it's meant to be an automatic stabilizer, where it becomes a buffer stock of publicly funded stock of employment opportunities, where people who can't find jobs in private sector can come in and out. So that's the conceptual ideal. But nowhere in this world has it been implemented nationwide. It's been, you know, piloted in some form in India with the Mahatma Gandhi National Rural Employment Act. Austria has one town that did it last year, which, you know, better reflects what I just described, which is basically if you can't find a job, you're guaranteed a job. Jamin Kerja is a step in that direction. It's almost like a distant cousin to the theoretical idea of a job guarantee, where government provides X number of jobs. In this case, if I remember correctly, my step will provide 80,000 in 2022. So rather than guaranteeing zero involuntary unemployment, which is what a conceptual job guarantee is meant to do, what this Jamin Kerja, at least via my step, is guaranteeing that at least 80,000 publicly funded / GLC funded jobs or positions will be created / filled. And then the rest of the 600,000 is, as you indicated, Sharad, you know, hiring incentives, place and train, or rather train and place type of initiatives that also aim to basically put public money into the system and allow for jobs to be created to the tune of 600,000. And it's the first time, that a Minister of Finance has spoken in Parliament and basically said that government will guarantee 600,000 people will get jobs. Now, you could argue that without these programs, without the hiring incentives, it's not to say that this program is going to give 600,000 jobs that would otherwise not be there. But I think if we're being intellectually honest, a big fraction of that 600,000 might not be there, if not for this spending that the government is putting in. And the other thing, just to quickly add, what's different from my step this year, or rather next year, which is from what's been done this year, as I understand it, is it's not just that GLCs will hire people for their own company, because that's when people start arguing maybe these are jobs that are not really necessary, these are just to fill in quotas or KPIs. I think what we've seen with Khazanah especially, and a lot of credit goes to them, what they did this year, as I understand it, was they funded it, but they placed these individuals in out-of-town SMEs, rather out-of-KL SMEs, into jobs that wasn't Khazanah jobs, but jobs in companies that Khazanah paid for. Now, imagine to a broader or longer logical conclusion. You could say then, therefore, that not just government creates jobs for government agencies, but government/GLCs can fund these jobs for more community work, for NGOs that, you know, presumably do social type work that wouldn't be created by the private sector itself. So that's when the distant cousin becomes less of a distant cousin.
Okay, well, you answered my question about what kind of jobs are being created. Now, I had wanted you to address some of the concerns that had been brought up, that perhaps some of these jobs were artificially created jobs that might not be sustainable or productive, particularly in the long run. And I like that you said, you know, the thinking is, if you can't find a job and you want a job, then the government guarantees a job. Can I ask you, Shari, I mean, this thinking has been implemented, certain initiatives have been introduced in several other budgets previously as well. I think last year there was a National Employment Council set up, 500,000 jobs was promised or aimed to be achieved. I mean, is someone monitoring that? Were those jobs created? And is this 600,000 jobs for the same people, that the same type of jobs that were created last year? I'm just wondering whether there's been monitoring and kind of continuity in terms of the initiatives that have been announced, particularly in addressing job creation and unemployment.
I think that's a really good question. And whatever happened last year or this year, I think next year what everybody would like to see is more transparent reporting on behalf of the government. And when the Minister of Finance in Parliament says that he guarantees, or the government guarantees 600,000 people will get jobs via this program, then I think he's on the hook for reporting it. I don't know what the reporting mechanism will be, but I think people will expect some sort of update or status report that, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't so forthcoming this year. So maybe that can be one of the positive changes this time around. Second thing about your question about what kind of jobs, which also should be part of those reports, right? That's when I hinted in my previous answer. Kalau boleh, if possible, it's not just, you know, GLC saying, right, I'll just hire a bunch of people, put it in my HQ office, which, by the way, is a problem because most of them are in KL. But rather GLC saying and government saying, if the stats department don't need more people, if Jabatan Kebajikan don't need more people, we will allow for example, NGOs, because I think that would be a great thing. NGOs who do community work, who do environmental work, for example, in a ground sense, we will fund those initiatives possibly as part of those jobs that we speak of. So this is not government policy. I'm not speaking on behalf of government, but I think that could be one push where we try and convince people, the doubters who say these are artificially created jobs, because it's a loaded term, right? Artificially created jobs, basically saying that these jobs are not necessary or not needed. If we can show that it's not just private sector
Sorry, Cheryl, if I could just jump in there with the question of, have we lost Cheryl? Melissa?
I'm not sure. I think we have, but let's try and get him back and see if we can. Yes, so unfortunately we've lost Cheryl, but we're going to take a quick break and we will try and get him back or we will speak to another economist, and we'll continue this conversation about the government's role in creating jobs, particularly as announced under Budget 2022 with the initiative Jamin Kerja. Stay tuned to Consider This. We'll be right back. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Lisa Idris with me, Sharad Kutin. We've got Shahril Hamdan back on the line, Information Chief for UMNO, recently appointed Economic Director in the Prime Minister's Office. Sharad, you had a question for Shahril.
Yes, Shahril, look, you were kind of explaining what the thinking is behind this. I wonder if there's a long-term analysis about jobs and where jobs are going to be created as the Malaysian economy evolves. This particular scheme, is it really about just addressing the current shortfall in jobs with the expectation that the market that's been driving job creation for decades now is going to, come back in a way that will be consistent with, you know, aspirations that people have about, wage levels and such? Is that, or is there a kind of concession or a kind of resignation that Malaysia might actually be entering to a phase where the market no longer can support the kind of aspirations people have, and government's going to have to somehow subsidize that?
So I'm going to try and make this simple as possible. I think there's truth in, well, I wouldn't say this is a concession of any sort when it comes to saying that the market, we've given up on the market. The market will always be the main driver of jobs, and as long as we live in this kind of system, that has to be the truth. And we've got to make it work. So the problems around wage suppression, the problems around underemployment, that is not going to be solved by Jamin Kerja or any type of job guarantee program on its own. This is both not a stopgap measure, but a recognition of where we are at this particular moment in time. But I'd like to think that this is also an opportunity to think outside the box or really challenge policymakers to start realizing that however gangbusters our economy is at any point in the future, there will always be unemployment. And can we begin to think of this as an automatic stabilizer? I know we were trying to, push me in a particular direction with regards to whether this is our answer to, low wages and the fact that there's a big unemployment problem in this country. It's not the only answer, and we will have to do more challenging, more bold things when it comes to ensuring that the private sector can create the kind of high-income jobs that we always speak of, we've been speaking about for the past decade. And that's about competitiveness, that's about our policies, that's about our investment, our FDI policies, what kind of FDI we attract, all the rest of it. So that still has to carry on, and that's perhaps a more difficult conversation. But even if we succeed with that, even if we create, median wages 2x, 3x from where we are right now, there will always be unemployment. And where I come in, at least in this particular ideological conversation, is to say that maybe government always has to step in. And even if our unemployment is at 300,000 versus 750 today, we still got to figure out what to do with 300,000. And the thinking right now globally, I think, more and more people are starting to question if full employment has to mean 2% unemployment. Think about that, Sharad and Melissa. We've always been taught that full employment still means that a bunch of people are unemployed. And I think that is something that the job guarantee conceptually, and Jamin Kerja is a baby step towards that, can begin to challenge. But to your original question, no, this does not solve the competitiveness problem. This doesn't solve the more deeper structural problems. But it serves a particular purpose in time.
All right, Sharad, thank you. We will definitely consider that. We'll take a quick break now, but that was Information Chief for UMNO, Shahril Hamdan. We're going to take a break, but we'll come back and speak to a World Bank economist of this, particularly about the Jobs Guarantee Program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hi, Hi, thanks so much for staying. Sharad and I will consider this. However, if you've just joined us on the show tonight, we're zooming in on one of the initiatives announced under Budget 2022, the Jamin Kerja Job Placement, a job guarantee scheme, which is aimed at creating some 600,000 jobs. When it comes to job creation, what should governments do? Joining us on the line now is Shakira Teixeira-Fudin. She's a senior economist at the World Bank. Shakira, what are your thoughts on, you know, not just this Jamin Kerja initiative that was recently announced, but I'm just wondering also overall in terms of how government is addressing job creation and unemployment in this budget?
Thanks, Sharia and Melissa, for having me tonight. I think maybe I'll start with a broader overview and things in terms of, you know, our quick takes on the budget in general before we move into jobs. So I think first thing, it's great that this budget is cognizant and that it's aware that this is a budget for a cautious recovery period. And as such, you see many of the support measures, including, you know, various employment measures, such as the Jamin Kerja initiative, the wage subsidies, various financial incentives are still in place. And that's good to know because you don't want to preemptively wind down some of these measures, given the uncertainty that we're seeing right now. And then on related to that is there is an attempt or more visibility in terms of making the budget more inclusive. And so you see a recognition in addressing lagging regions such as Sabah, Sarawak, as well as lagging states in Peninsula. And also related to jobs, and as we move on later, is there is also the recognition to provide additional support to vulnerable groups such as Orang Asli, the OKU, senior citizens, and children. And finally, before again we discuss a bit further on the employment market, is of course there is a bigger and deliberate emphasis on women and includes measures to encourage women to return to the labor force, provision of childcare, for example, as well as personal hygiene kits for women. So moving into employment measures or the Jamin Kerja initiative, I think broadly it is a more comprehensive measure than, you know, the initial wage subsidy program that we saw in the previous stimulus packages, in that it covers also upskilling and training opportunities. So its aim at this particular budget at certain groups of workers. So you see those who have been unemployed for a certain amount of time, women, some vulnerable groups, including the disabled and Orang Asli, are sort of targeted as part of this Jamin Kerja initiative. And so broadly, I think wage subsidies can be an important tool for supporting employment and re-employment during this period of recovery by reducing the cost of hiring workers for businesses. So what we've seen so far is that during the crisis, the wage subsidy program that was previously introduced do provide some relief for firms to sort of support the retention of workers. But of course, we do see a higher number of unemployment taking place, particularly for those employed by the SMEs, despite the wage subsidies.
Shakira, if I can jump in, can I ask you, one of the things that we seem to notice during the period of lockdown, the long and very painful lockdowns, was that it affected people in the informal sector. You know, those people who make a living basically from day to day, often depending on footfall in order to ply their wares. Where do they fit into the image that government seems to have about the unemployed? Are these people who used to have jobs, work for somebody else, pay EPF, maybe have a university degree or whatever it is? Is that the image the government has of the unemployed, or is it that person selling goreng pisang who's been under tremendous pressure over the last year and a half?
I think it cuts across several groups, particularly during this crisis. So, as you said, Sharad, the informal workers were, you know, one of the sort of more severely affected groups as a result of the pandemic. But at the same time, we saw, for example, underemployment increase, and that has been sort of on an upward trend even prior to the pandemic. So those were affected groups as well. And I think what's key here is that the government recognized this, and that was sort of supported by some of the cash assistance and transfer measures that they introduced. So there is a recognition that there are certain groups within you know, the whole gamut of the labor market that were more affected than the others. So, for example, I think we put out a study by some of our colleagues, those in the agriculture sector, for example, aren't able to work from home, and they are more affected by the pandemic than, say, for example, the, your typical office workers. So, yes, there are sort of differentiation within the labor market sector.
Right. And when you, you know, bearing that in mind, thinking about the kind of Jamin Kerja initiative, how would this initiative, how, what kind of shape or form would you like this initiative to take in order to address the multidimensional labor market, in order to address the different regions that, you know, in the ways unemployment and underemployment affect in different regions? How should this, what do you think it would take for this initiative to be truly effective to address the current unemployment situation?
Well, in terms of, you know, labor market measures, I think, and as well as with social protection measures, these are best if they are well targeted and carefully implemented. So, I mean, take, for example, the MyStep program, which is the temporary employment program. So if it's targeted well, for example, to fresh graduates, it may provide them with the job experience that they need in order to move on to better jobs later. So it depends, again, it has to be well targeted, and I think the implementation is key. So there is a mention of, you know, this various initiatives could lead to creation of about 600,000 jobs. But of course, the implementation, when it comes to, you know, applying the transaction costs for anybody to join some of these initiatives have to be low in order for them to sort of incentivize or take up some of these initiatives at the same time. I think monitoring the implementation and both in the short term and the long term of these initiatives are also important in order to sort of like provide some information in order for the program to be more flexible if there are any such big changes happening in the economy.
So can we pick up on that point of monitoring? Because we asked the previous guest, Cheryl Hamdan, about previous promises also to create jobs and what seems to be a lack of data on whether any of those promises were fulfilled, whether and what the impact was, long-term, short-term, things that you mentioned about this being a stepping stone to something better. Is that something just an aspiration of government rather than a reality on the ground? What, in the experience of the World Bank, does the Malaysian government collect enough data so that we can evidence-based policymaking that, you know, can be tweaked and can evolve as we understand the consequences of those policies? Is there enough data?
Well, I think there are two parts to that question. So first of all, I think, yes, there should be better monitoring of the situation. It's through better implementation as well as better collection of data. And I think in terms of data, the information is out there. I think what can be improved by the government is, of course, a better data ecosystem, in which case I think data information is better shared across ministries and across agencies. So fragmentation is something that is quite common to see in public sector. So it's not that we don't have data, in my opinion. I think what is more important is to have to improve the governance and the coordination across ministries and agencies who are monitoring the situation on the ground.
Right. Shakira, can I ask you, I mean, a lot of people have pointed out that, you know, these job initiatives or these types of job initiatives, particularly announced in budget and at this time, is a short-term measure. But unemployment and underemployment is something that Malaysia has been grappling with for long before the pandemic struck. And I'm just wondering whether you saw any kind of structural initiatives that were meant to address some of the structural problems around employment and what you would like to see in particular as we come out of this, as we are, you know, dealing with kind of some of the short-term initiatives, what you would like to see be addressed for the long-term, to address the long-term issues of underemployment and unemployment?
Sure, I think, as we all know, the budget is a one-year document, so it's more short-term in nature. But I think what we hope to see over the medium term and the long term is, first, I think there's always this talk about creating high-value jobs, high-skilled jobs in the market. And one of the things I think the government is thinking about this is through its investment policy. So basically attracting more quality investments into the country, which can provide high-skilled jobs that, you know, it's much talked about going forward. But I think it also has to be complemented with the discussion of creating jobs should be complemented with talks about protecting, increasing social protection or improving social protection, and at the same time, protecting workers' welfare. And I think even more long-term is in terms of human capital development in this country. So I think we came out with a report, I think a couple of years back, saying that for Malaysia to have a productive workforce, it has to concentrate on two things. One is, of course, in terms of education. And there's definitely gaps for Malaysia. I think there's a learning gap of 3 years. So basically, children in Malaysia go to school for about 12 years. And then, but the learning amount of learning that they get is only for about 9 years. So that has to be improved in order to have that skilled workforce. And then secondly, in terms of the health measures as well. So Malaysia has has quite a high stunting rate that cuts across all income levels. So that has to be sort of addressed and improved as well, because you want to have, again, not just a skilled workforce, but also a productive and healthy workforce going forward. So I think those are some of the, you know, more long-term and medium-term takes when it comes to employment. So what we see in the budget is, of course, it's for 1 year. We'll probably see more initiatives going forward, but I think these are some of the issues that has to be tackled now for long-term outcomes.
Right. Thank you so much, Shakira, for joining us on the show. Shakira Tesharifuddin from the World Bank. That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.